right, welcome back to Shakedown Shan. It looks like we got through that little difficult patch here. My Facebook Live wasn't working, our sound wasn't working, but it's all good now. Hopefully Facebook Live doesn't cut out and just delete it like last time, but whatever. Hope you all had a great week. I had a very cold, snowy week, but I got my studded snow tires put on just before the storm. Got them put on Thursday morning, and then we got hit with a 16-hour snowstorm. It's not fun, but I would tell you.
It wasn't that much.
Yes, it was. 16 hours, I counted.
But we could have got 2 inches of snow, and that would have been too much for you.
Yeah, yeah, true. I don't want any snow. I'm perfectly okay with a green Christmas. Snow is, like, cool to visit, I feel like, but I don't like to live in it. Because then it's pretty when it falls, but then it gets, like, sandy and yucky, and it's not fun to look at, and you just get tired of it.
The first coating of snow is pretty. Everything looks the same. After that, it gets messed up. Hey, on my morning show this morning, guess where I got a call from?
Where?
Barbados.
Really?
Yeah.
Somebody, that's awesome.
Somebody was listening to the show.
Oh.
And called in. How they got the show, I have no idea, but they called in about the topic we were talking about.
Oh, nice. What were you guys talking about?
Oh, the election, what's going on in the city, and some Thanksgiving trivia.
Thanksgiving trivia.
Yeah. So I said to them, do you have wild turkeys running around Barbados? Joking. They said, no, we have horses. Wild horses run around. I said, all right. And he said, well, the only wild turkey I have down here is in a glass with ice cubes. So, but I thought it was fun getting a call.
Yeah, I don't really like Thanksgiving. It's not my favorite holiday.
You know, you sound like my daughter. she doesn't like turkey. Well, she doesn't like Thanksgiving food, she said.
Oh, me either.
So
all I eat is potatoes and cranberry sauce.
Well, I make sweet potatoes, and then my wife makes sweet potato casserole.
I don't even like sweet potatoes.
Oh, gosh. Well, they're, you know, candied-like, you know. And then we have stuffing, and she doesn't like turkey. She likes ham. So I said, well, look, I'll buy a ham steak, and then you can have that. And she likes the sweet potatoes and that. And she says, no, I'll just pick what I want to pick on. So she said Christmas is my favorite food time.
Yeah, Christmas has some good food. Again, I'm not a fan of the ham, obviously.
Right.
But
or pork.
Right. So I think we like to do like a lasagna.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least I like to do it. Mm-hmm. I like lasagna. So that's pretty cool for Christmas. I like Christmas as a holiday, and the two holidays that I don't like that I just I'm not a fan of our Thanksgiving and Easter.
Well, I like Easter too.
I like to decorate the eggs, but like I just don't like to celebrate Easter. Like it, to me, I'm not religious though. Yeah. Also, it is a
you
very
will
religious
be
holiday.
Before.
This I'm making is gonna it be my the life's, show where he
I'm gonna make it my life's mission.
But to me, it never had any meaning to me. So I'm like, why are we like getting dressed up and eating food? It just doesn't make sense to me. I know Christmas is religious too, but that's more of like a tradition thing. Easter's never been big in my family.
No.
No. But Christmas is fun because it's about giving and stuff to me.
Mm-hmm.
Not so much the religious aspect, but I like 4th of July. That's my favorite holiday.
4th of July?
Yep.
Because you can have a cookout?
And there's fireworks everywhere. Like, as soon as the end of June comes around, you start hearing fireworks, and then July hits, and you see them all the time.
Really?
It's awesome.
Now, is it busy up where you are?
In the summer?
4th of July?
Yeah.
Has it started then?
Oh, yeah. It starts before that, really. Like, the end of May. Especially because, like, down south, school ends in May.
Right.
So people start coming up end of May, early June. And then it really takes off, like Americade week, the first full week of June, the tourists start coming in.
That's neat. I talked about that on the show this morning, Hadley, and I mentioned you that, you know, Shan, who does the podcast on our thing, lives up there, and she was giving me some information on Hadley. It's a beautiful area, and I think everybody should really go up there and see.
Oh,
it
yeah, it's definitely beautiful.
Matter of fact, I started out by telling them that we got lost, my monitor and I got lost up there with our school bus. It took us quite a ways around to find the North Way, but yeah. I'm glad we did.
Yeah. So I did look into the fires in California. I don't know why it took me so long to hear about it, but after the last show, I looked into them, and I pulled up this really interesting thing from Reason Magazine about it's titled California Wildfires Destroy Homes and Lives. Why do regulators encourage building in fire zones? A toxic mix of bad insurance regulations and bad housing regulations ensure Golden State residents will continue to return to fire-ravaged areas. That's interesting. Mm-hmm. So I saw that, and I was like, oh, kind of makes sense, but why? So, sorry, I'm really sick.
That's okay.
I just can't get rid of this cold.
Don't worry about it. It's anyway. Better than hiccuping.
So this is from the 14th, so the stats aren't going to be up to date, really, but it's more about the information. So it says 50 people have died in the fires currently raging in the Golden State, with 48 perishing as a result of the Camp Fire in the northern, mostly rural Butte County, if that's how you pronounce it, which has also destroyed 7,600 homes, and I'm sure it's gone up since then. This makes it the deadliest and most destructive fire in California history. In response to devastation on this scale, one would expect insurance premiums to shoot up, and for many of the affected residents to move. Oh wait, and for many of the affected residents to move away from fire-prone areas into larger, safer cities. But thanks to California's funky way of regulating insurance, this is likely not going to happen. As insurance policy expert Ray Lehman says, an insurance policy expert at the R Street Institute. So he says, California makes it really difficult for the market to do what it would normally do in these cases, which is when the assessments of risk go up, insurance rates go up, and a place becomes less attractive to build there. That's how they keep people out of like hurricane prone areas and stuff, keep building to a minimum, and in earthquake areas and stuff like that, no one wants to pay that premium. It's to help people,
right?
And I mean, if you really want to be there, you will find a way to pay that. But we know California is really big on regulation, and so they get into everything, and of course they're gonna go try to mess around with the insurance.
Sure. Well, one thing they're big on regulation is I heard some statistics on TV from non-California officials. There are 183 million dead trees in the forests and woods in California. Well, what happens if, what do you start a fire with? You have a fireplace?
Yeah.
Okay, what do you start your fire? You don't set the logs, right? What do you start first?
Like leaves and cardboard and
kindling.
Yeah.
All right.
Twigs.
183 million dead trees makes great kindling for forest fires.
Yeah.
So they were saying, they were taking California to task because California has laws, almost like in the Adirondacks, in it, that you can't take trees down, you can't remove, you know, you can't clear trees and that.
Not a lot of people really follow that around.
I know,
here.
I know, but I don't mean clear cut good trees, but you can take dead trees down and sell the wood. And I think California should open that up. But their EPA laws and some other laws regulate that. So, you know, you got those Santa Anita winds, because everybody's saying, well, the environment is getting so bad, this is what happens. But this has happened for hundreds of years in California. They have no water.
It's dry.
You got 183 million trees in the woods and that. That's why these fires get so big. So why not be preventive and change the laws so that you can clear out the dead trees?
Yeah.
It would make sense. But now I guess tomorrow they're looking for rain. So that's going to help the fires burn down. But it just doesn't make sense to me that with all that dead wood, I mean, they can't blame it on anybody but themselves. They can't blame the environment.
They're not helping it.
That's right.
By any means.
You know.
And where was I? As with most of California's problems, its dysfunctional insurance market can be traced back to a decades-old ballot initiative, in this case, Proposition 103. Passed in 1988, this proposition created an elected insurance commissioner who was responsible for approving rate increases. All right, so there we go. We're adding more government in, like, more administration that things have to go through. And that just means it's going to take longer to get done. So anytime they need a quick change to something, it's not going to be quick because they have to go through this longer process. So the law allows for extensive public input on any proposed rate hike. And you know, public, they're not going to want the rates to increase. And a lot of them might not understand why they're increasing in certain areas. And so, of course, they're not going to vote for that. This makes trying to increase rates in response, to increased risks a laborious political process. As a result, insurers are slower to respond to risk and less able to write policies that discount fire safe practices on an individual basis, say by charging less for having a stone porch instead of a flammable wood one. In addition, California regulators are forbidden from setting policyholder rates based on furniture risks, like increasing incidences of wildfires due to climate change for existence. Oh, future risks, not furniture. I said furniture.
That's okay. They could use stone furniture.
Or the increasing cost of reinsurance, which in insurance is insurance on insurance. Insurers are being squeezed as reinsurers raise their prices to reflect growing wildfire risks, but they can't raise policyholder insurance rates to reflect the risk that all parties have identified. In essence, insurers, not the insured, have to pay for that risk, which defeats the entire purpose. It does. Mm-hmm. So you have an insurance company, and they're trying to increase rates in places that have more risk. And as the risks for wildfires are going up, they need to increase that. And they can't. They're being told that they can't. And so as more wildfires are happening, these insurance companies are eating the cost of that because the government is telling them that they can't increase the rates.
I know. It's ridiculous.
And all they're trying to do is increase rates to discourage people from being there so they're safe and so that they don't have to eat the cost of the wildfire that comes rolling through.
Right.
And it's just a disadvantage on all ends. The consequences of this system are twofold. The first is that at the state's Department of Insurance, noted in a lengthy report from January, some people are having trouble finding any insurance at all for properties in very fire-prone areas. So, yeah, I could see why they would do that. Insurance companies probably won't even insure there anymore just because they're not allowed to raise the rates. Because insurers can't sell them policies that reflected the likelihood of their houses burning down, they won't sell them insurance at all. The second consequence is that homeowners who are getting insurance are not paying what they should, considering the likelihood they'll lose their home to fire, which means they have no incentive to rebuild their properties in a way that would reduce the risk. There's not an incentive when they rebuild to rebuild a better standard and use better practices. That's the bigger concern. The issue is compounded further by the polar opposite ways in which California state law and localities treat development. In those cases in countries affected by wildfires, regulators are quick to waive zoning laws and permitting requirements post-disaster. These redevelopments are also exempt from the California Environmental Quality Act, which mandates expensive pre-construction environmental reviews and which can stall projects for years. Go figure. Government giving it more time.
Yeah.
In other parts of the state, the CEQA, which we just read out, is in full effect, and restrictive zoning codes and permitting requirements make it incredibly difficult to build more residential housing. This is partly true in large urban centers. Indeed, the number of structures destroyed by the campfire alone is a little less than twice the number of residential units San Francisco managed to add last year. So in short, California is encouraging people to build where they should not and discouraging them from building where they should. Incentives are aligned in such a way that makes more sense for property owners who have lost a home to fire to rebuild in the same spot rather than to move to a different location. And this is why so many Californians live in fire-prone areas and are likely to face ever deadlier and more destructive fires.
Yeah, I mean,
I never thought about that. I didn't know that was a thing, that they weren't allowed to increase rates. I was always wondering, well, why do these people live here?
Right.
Well, they have low rates because they just can't go up. So going off of that, did you hear about Kanye and Kim?
No.
Buying private firefighters to help try to put out the fire?
Oh, really?
And people are outraged by it.
Why?
Right, that's what I said. Why? So, Kanye and Kim saw that the firefighters just couldn't, our public firefighters just could not keep up. They needed help. And that, so they spent a lot of their own money to hire private firefighters to go try to help. And so people are getting upset over private firefighters does a whole lot less good than the firefighters themselves.
Yeah, I don't believe it.
And the firefighters did save their home, I guess, so that people are like, well, they only bought it to save their home. And they're saying, they're like, so the rich can be safe from natural disasters, but the poor have to suffer and be killed and have everything destroyed. But it wasn't just for their home either. And just the fact of that just shows that people are seeing that so anything that's public is put in place by the government, and it's what we pay for with our tax money. And so they saw that their tax dollars just weren't helping them. And they were showing that when government's not doing its job, the public can go do it better.
Yeah, I know.
So, I mean, having firefighters is great, but I think the way I see it is we should have a whole bunch of different private firefighter companies. And if you want your house protected by them, you have to pay for that service. You can choose whether or not. I mean, it's just like tax, but it would be voluntary rather than just taken from you.
Sure.
Because who even knows if half the money that's supposed to be allotted to going to the firefighters
is going
there. You don't know the figures, but if we had private firefighting companies and they could respond to individual houses or whatever, and then communities could hire them and be like, listen, we want you to protect our community. Like, we want this company to protect our community.
But you have volunteer fire departments that are staffed by people who are trained and want to do the job, and they don't make anywhere near I mean, of course, they're unpaid.
Right.
But, I mean, can you imagine how much would be saved if you had a volunteer fire department over a paid fire department? Because they get quite a bit of money and benefits, you know, and things like that. Hey, I just want to tell you, President Trump is out in California. And as of 14 minutes ago, 74 people died. And 1,000 people are unaccounted for.
A thousand people.
So that's up to 14 minutes ago. That's the statistics from the fire. That's sad.
That is sad. And it's sad that, like you said, California could have helped out a lot by all these years allowing people to go get dead wood out of the forest.
Exactly.
It's just, that's disaster waiting to happen. California's known for wildfires, and that's only going to fuel the fire more.
Well, that's what it is. And then, another thing that I heard that I never thought of, but a lot of these cities, the reason why people die and, probably why there's 1,000 people missing, fire eats up oxygen. And when you get a real bad fire like that, that goes, even around the city, or that, it's taken a lot of oxygen out of the air, and people can't breathe. And I'll bet you a lot of those people that are missing are older people that just, mm-hmm. couldn't breathe and couldn't get out of the way of it because of their age. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's almost like Oklahoma, the tornado alley there, and the people keep rebuilding, and then every 10 years, like, one will come through and destroy the city again. And why would you want to live there?
Oh, yeah.
But seriously.
Really? I wonder what their insurance is like. I wonder if they're regulated.
I don't know.
I'd have to look into that.
Yeah. It would be an interesting thing to look at, because you're choosing to live there.
Right.
You're choosing to rebuild there, knowing that, they call it Tornado Alley because it seems like that's, yeah. And I don't know, if you want to stay there, then you should pay higher insurance premiums and relieve some of the
insurance company.
Right, and relieve some of the stress on the other people that live in Oklahoma.
Yeah.
I wouldn't keep rebuilding a house that kept getting, taken away. The only one I would is if I was in The Wizard of Oz. Then I might keep rebuilding. No, but, why should somebody in, let's say, northern Oklahoma pay higher taxes because you want to stay in the spot that keeps getting destroyed?
Yeah.
Doesn't make sense.
I just think insurance companies have, or they definitely have the right to decide insurance premiums based on all the risks involved.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you're a driver, when you're younger, you pay higher insurance until you're a certain age. And then if you get in an accident, your insurance goes up. Because now you have one accident, like, you are a person that is likely to get in another one. Whereas I've never had an accident, so my insurance keeps going down every 6 months or whatever. So it's like, there's insurance is there for a reason, and the people that have it but don't ever use it are mm-hmm. going to pay less for it because they're less likely to have to use it.
Exactly.
And the people that do use it a lot, it keeps going up because they need to pay for the fact that you're going to use this again.
Right.
So you've got to have the money there.
And why should you pay for it when haven't had an accident or any problem? But it's like there are flood zones around here, and they do, when you go to get a mortgage, you do have to have flood insurance in that. And I think that's good, because if not, people would keep building in, flood zones. And there's a reason for that. I think the reason is so that we don't have to pay for somebody doing something that is a risk. Let them pay the higher premium, like you said.
Right. And so it doesn't make any sense for government to step in and put like a cap on insurance premiums. Like, if you're living in an area with wildfires and tornadoes and hurricanes and flooding and whatever, you should have to pay that higher premium because it only makes sense. And if you don't want to pay that, you might realize, this might not be a smart idea.
Right.
Or if you see that the premium is so high and you don't know why, research it, and then you'll find out, this place gets burnt down every 3 years. Maybe it's not a good idea to live here.
Right. Exactly. But that's one of the scary things about the new Congress coming in, because they're already starting to say they're going to do things that is going to take us back to the days of more government and less, like we talked about last week, less state involvement in their own things. And I just can't see that, you know. Already they have 84. They want to investigate Trump, and they have 84 commissions set up to do investigations. Now, what a waste of money.
And time.
They could be doing so many things to make the U.S. better, to make us better, and they're wasting money investigating. I mean, and they're not going to take the Mueller's investigation. If they find that Trump didn't do anything, they're going to start their own investigation to prove that he did. Well, how long has this guy been investigating? And it's like he spent $15 million already,
right,
of our money.
Come on.
I know, really.
Nobody even cares anymore.
No, it's over with.
Yeah.
I mean, if this guy says Trump didn't do anything, that's it. This is what they wanted him appointed to do. So, you know, I mean, the government gets into things and wastes our tax money, and it keeps getting bigger. And that's what's going to happen.
Yep. I actually was on Facebook the other day, and I don't normally get very social on, like, other people's posts, because I know, like, how, like, everyone's just, like, the outrage police.
Mm-hmm.
And so I try to not just get into that. I more, like, socialize with people on my stuff that are, like, engaged in what I'm talking about. But I saw some girl demanding free health care and how everybody should have free health care and blah blah blah, and no one should have to pay this much money. And so I commented, like, just some information, and I was like, well, if I told you that the reason why the premiums are so high is because we're subsidizing health care and the government's hands are all over it, would that, and I went off on this huge tangent about supply and demand and blah, 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 that, like, that episode that we did,
mm-hmm.
and I was applying it to health insurance, and she just comments back, well, that's your opinion, that's not my opinion, so I don't care. And I was like, well, I thought you cared about this.
Right.
I'm giving you a solution, and I'm giving you a reason of why it's so expensive. I'm trying to tell you why. And how calling for more government intervention in it is not going to help. Like, have you looked at Europe? Have you looked at it? Have you seen their healthcare system?
I know.
It's scary. And it's just, it's ridiculous, because people will be out there chanting for things and free things and for more government intervention in it. And then you try to tell them just some information and they freak out. Totally, they, like, dismiss what you're saying. They don't want to hear what you're saying or anything. And it's like, well, I thought you cared about this. Wouldn't you be open to suggestion of any idea if that's the issue you care about? And I told her, I'm like, well, I don't really think you care about this topic if you're not open to hearing what I have to say. To me, it just sounds like you want to voice an opinion with no education put behind it.
Right. Well, that's what I was going to say. They don't want to rationalize. They don't want any argument to be rationalized, because, I mean, to listen to what you have to say, it's just going to go over their heads, because they're not educated on the
that topic. Yeah, they haven't looked into it.
Right.
And so, like I said, to me, it really just, it shows that she doesn't really care about it.
No.
It's not, she just has an uneducated opinion and goes with, like, this collectivism idea of what the solution is.
Sure.
And she's not open to any suggestions.
Don't they realize, I mean, why do they think that people from other countries come here for medical help?
Right.
Because they can't get it from their own country.
Right.
So they come here for heart operations and, you know, different.
If they're even allowed to.
If they're allowed to,
like,
right.
That one kid couldn't go anywhere.
Well, you know, it's sad, because we're getting so tied up in illegal immigrants coming over. And I didn't realize this, but 90% of the illegal immigrants that we end up having to take care of money-wise don't even have a high school education. So what are they going to be adding to our economy to help pay for their benefits that they get?
Right.
Nothing. And this one guy said that every year there's a new congressional district made up just because of so many illegals coming over here. So he said by the year 2050, 85% of the country will be speaking Spanish, and most of the counties down south will be run by Spanish speaking people. So you can imagine what the U.S. is going to end up moving towards. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. It's kind of scary.
Yeah. Well, I just, it struck me off that this girl just didn't even want to
talk about it.
No, it was just, I have this radical opinion. And I also brought up the point that healthcare is a service. Mm-hmm. Services aren't free. We can't demand these people trying to work a job and provide a service to do it for free. And yeah, if you get the government to subsidize it, they'll be paid by the government, but they're not going to be paid well by any means, not as well as they would in the free market providing a service.
Right.
And they're going to be overworked because healthcare would be so accessible to everybody, even people that don't need it. Because there are people like younger kids, like my generation, a lot of people don't have healthcare. Mm-hmm. Because we don't use it a lot.
Right.
I mean, I think it's a good idea, obviously. But a lot of us, you get sick, you take some over-the-counter medicine, and you're better. And a lot of us don't have very serious things going on. But, like, once you start, like, getting 30, you're like, oh, well, like, I might fall and break my back at work. Like, right. That could happen.
Well, that's what Obamacare was based on, that the elderly would get the most use of the insurance, and the younger people would be paying that premium.
And it backfired, and because we don't get health insurance.
That's right.
Well, most of us don't get it or seem to need it.
Right, and when there was that penalty, they'd rather pay the penalty than pay the premium for the insurance.
Right.
And then it ended up where...
And that's why premiums are so high.
Right.
And we're trying to make up for that. And it's just when you're giving insurance to everybody, no matter what they can pay, you're taking that premium that they're not paying and forcing all those premiums on the people that are paying, which increases our premiums, mm-hmm. to try to make up for the slack there. And that hurts the middle class a lot because we can't afford that.
No
we can't. People like me, we can't afford that.
Right.
And so it just doesn't make sense economically. And I was saying that. I was like, this is a service. It can't be provided for free. None of this makes sense economically. Just go read about supply and demand. And she's still like, no. And so when I told her that she didn't care about it, she goes, okay, well, what am I supposed to do? Me against the government? And I'm like, oh, come on.
I know.
Like, now I just don't even care about, like, explaining it to you.
Well, you can't.
You really can't.
And it's not worth getting in
exactly.
an argument over.
So I was just like, never mind. I'm just talking to a brick wall. See, like, it's just bouncing back at me.
Another thing that you have to look at, and I always tell this to people, is that if you make, let's say the government makes health care where everybody can get it, how many... people are going to go in the medical field? How many doctors are we going to have? Because they have to pay so much money to go to college to be a doctor.
And then they're not going to get paid enough.
And they're not going to get paid because their pay is going to be regulated by the government. Do you think there's going to be a lot of people going in the medical field?
Mm-mm.
I don't think so. And nursing? Yeah, I don't think so. So it's going to create a whole nother layer of government, because they'll end up having to rearrange so
right.
that, you know, and
when the government controls something, gets their hands on it and starts regulating, like we said with the insurance thing, with them electing the commissioner to put things through him instead mm-hmm. of the insurance companies doing it, just when government gets into things, it creates regulations, makes things harder to do. There's yep. less innovation, less improvement. The quality goes down because there's no incentive for good quality because they get that monopoly on that service.
Right.
and everyone's all for monopolies are bad, but yet when the government gets to monopolize a service, that's okay, right?
Yeah.
So I was telling her, I was like, well, the free market is going to give you the best quality healthcare at the lowest price possible. And there's always going to be competition and incentive to be the best quality at the best price. Mm-hmm. It just makes sense.
No, you're right. And like we said, unfortunately, you can't talk to people like that. I mean, because it creates a whole nother layer of bureaucracy.
Right.
And what happens then is I don't know of any government run program that is so top heavy with administrators that, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That they could do without half of them. Right. And that's what's going to happen with this. There'll be so many bureaucrats.
It's going to take forever to get things done. That's just like right. Europe, like we talked about before, when like you're going for like mental health help or something, you wait months, years to get approved, to go get help. And whereas in a free market, you have health insurance that's low price, mm-hmm. and you have quality health care at a decent price, and you go in, say, I need X, Y, and Z, and they go ahead and they do it, because it's all about, that's about customer service too. Mm-hmm. The government has no reason to want to provide good customer service.
No.
They got elected there, and they don't get kicked out until they get kicked out.
Yeah, when they're 50 years, when they serve 50 years, right. And they're 82.
So there's no incentive for anything that's going to benefit us.
Well, one of the things that's good in this country, too, that I think healthcare provides is mental help. Because I think if it was a free system, they wouldn't take that good of an approach on mental health. And we pretty much do here in this country. And that's where a lot of problems start. I mean, most of these shooters have mental health issues, you know, but nobody brings attention to it. Mm-hmm. You always hear the mother saying, oh, well, he hasn't been right in, you know, the last 10 years. Well, if she had said something to the police or somebody like that, he would have gotten help.
Right.
You know, where, I don't know.
Speaking of regulations, Airbnb has been given some new regulations.
They have.
By the government. In Washington, D.C. So Airbnb made D.C. affordable for tourists. The city council just voted to rein it in. Hosts will be required to get a license, report their activities, and only rent properties where they reside. That's absolutely ridiculous. A, I'm glad I went to D.C. when I did, because we weren't going to be staying at the Airbnb. We weren't like going to spend time there a lot. We were just there to sleep. That was it. So we just got a small room in a shared house. And I think for the whole weekend, it was just a little over 100 for a whole weekend in D.C.
Really?
Right. And so the beautiful thing about Airbnb is if you're a situation like that where you're going to be out the whole time, you just need a bed. That's great. You can find really good places in like a shared house or whatever, have a room, and it's very, very cheap. Or if you're looking for something comfortable, you're going to be spending a lot of time there, you might opt to get like a private house. Mm-hmm. Or like if you're going with a bunch of people, I'll chip in for a private house, and even that's pretty affordable too. And that would be an instance where the people own the house but don't live there. They have right. a house, and they rent it out on Airbnb, and it's always being used. And now they can't do that. They can only rent properties where they reside. Why? They own the other property.
Right. Correct.
And so, I mean, A, that's hurting side income for people that choose to rent out their places with Airbnb.
Right.
They also have to get a license. So they're making them spend money. I mean, the beautiful thing about Airbnb was that Airbnb, you sign up to be an Airbnb person, they have to qualify you. You have to go through a process. They do background checks, all that stuff. And they have to, like, qualify your living space and everything. And then people that use Airbnb, they can rate and leave reviews mm-hmm. about the place they stayed. And then after so many, like, 5-star reviews, the person becomes a super host, which means that's a really great place to be. I've stayed with a super host, wow. 2 super hosts. They were awesome. And also the renters get rated and reviewed by the host. So that way, if you were a terrible customer mm-hmm. and you trashed the room and everything and you were rude, people, they're going to leave that review. They're going to rate you on a 5-star rating basis. And people are going to know not to rent to you.
Yeah.
And it's a great system. And here the government's like, oh, this is going to hurt the hotel industry and everything. Well, the hotel industry should keep up and do something. This is the market bringing out a better quality service mm-hmm. with more options, because you get to choose if you want a whole house or right. if you want a house with a pool, or if you just need a room, or you need 2 rooms. Or whatever you want, and the type of host that you want to have or whatever. And it's just, this is better quality. The customer gets to choose more. They have more options, and right. it's at a lower price, an extremely low price.
But now they're making them pay the government.
And it's just going to go up.
Right.
And it's, oh, God.
Well, do you realize that, like, just take Saratoga, for example. They have, I don't know how many hotel rooms that they have here. It's quite a few, though.
Yeah, between. Yeah.
All right, they have to pay a use tax, a bed tax, they call it, to the city when someone stays overnight. And the city gets half of it, and I think the Downtown Business Association gets the other half. So, but where do you think that money comes from? In the amount that they rent the room for.
Right, yeah.
So if you can,
so that jacks
if
it up.
You can get an Airbnb, all right, let's say in Saratoga Springs, and I don't know what they cost, but obviously it's not going to be anywhere near.
No, not near a hotel room.
All right,
room
so if Saratoga. They charge a hotel room here $190 a night.
Oh, it's a lot more than that.
Well it's yeah. a lot more than that. Well, I think it depends to what season. Depends. I mean, now the low, you know, I mean, the high class restaurants like the Radisson or, you know, the bigger Hyatt and that, they probably get a lot more. Mm-hmm. But when they're afraid and the city's afraid that they're not going to make their bed tax, so
and
they're
so
going to.
They got to come up with improvements.
Yeah, I know that. Right. Or lower their rates so they right. can compete.
Right.
But what they want to do, like you had said earlier about insurance, instead of competing with the market, what they're doing is trying to destroy a market.
They are. They are. They're trying to destroy Airbnb. But yeah. The way I see it is that if hotels can't keep up, then they are an industry that is meant to go out of business. And that's just how the market works, because if you have something come in that's so much better, that means that they are supposed to be here. This is their time. Like, you served your purpose for the time being, and now we came out with something better. This is what the people want, and it's better for them. And too bad. Like, if you can't keep up with that, then why should the government come save you? And then hurt the people.
Right. Government.
It makes no sense.
And that's what's wrong with the government right. involving themselves in business.
Like, if cars were never invented, or if cars started being invented and they're like, no, because now people can't horse breed anymore.
Right.
Okay, well, this gets us around faster. And it's better, and we can keep it longer than a horse.
Yeah.
So, like,
and it doesn't
I think
cost
I heard that
much.
Analogy. It's funny, I heard that analogy in a podcast that I was listening to this week. They somehow got into a topic like this, and I think I just used their example of the horse and the car.
Oh, neat.
But it related to the Airbnb thing. So
you know, just to get back for a minute, and then you can go back to a topic. I heard on the news the other day where in Seattle there was a race for congressperson. One was a lady who was a Democrat, and the other was a younger fella that was running in the Republican ticket. And he ended up backing out of the race with 2 weeks ago before the election. Mm-hmm. And he was sort of like, they were really close, which they didn't think, you know, was going to happen. But so they asked him, why did he back out? And he said, because they were getting death threats, him and his family, and they were protesting in front of his house all night. And he was afraid for his life. So he backed out. Now, isn't that, I know we've talked about this before, but I mean, when they don't want younger people to be involved in politics because, you know, they may think different like you. I mean, with getting involved in businesses and that, of course, the liberals want to do that more and more. But this poor fella had to back out of the election because of death threats and that. And you look at, what are we coming to, you know? And, I mean, it's the same thing with, well, almost the same thing with businesses like the hotel industry. What they're doing, they're forcing out a couple, and competition, a couple who maybe has a few extra bedrooms and can offer a product cheaper. But so now they want to regulate Airbnbs.
Right. And this is like a side income for people. And so these hotels are like, no, I'm going to take the money away from you that you need and try to keep it this way. But the people staying with you are people that were never going to be with me anyway.
Right.
It doesn't make any sense.
Well, see, that way they can use the money to give to people that don't want to work. You know, and they can become the controlling person and keep getting reelected. And that's a sad thing that if you have something that somebody wants and you can offer it to them for a fair price, that you won't be able to because they're going to be regulated out of business.
Right, and that's what they're trying to do with Uber, too. The cab company is just so outraged about Uber. They're going to put us out of business. Well, maybe you're meant to go out of business.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing lasts forever. Not with the market. It's always changing.
Right. They're not competing.
Yeah, they're not competing at all. They're not coming up with new ways. I mean, we used to have flip phones.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have smartphones. And that's because there was innovation.
Right.
And so new phones came out with more capabilities, and it's amazing what you can do with something in your pocket.
It's a free, and it was free market that made that.
Right. But it's just, it just doesn't make any sense.
It's frustrating.
It is frustrating.
Life in the U.S. is getting very frustrating because people came over here with the idea that they were going to make something for themselves and make life better for themselves. And it's very difficult to do that now
because you can't the do government, that now.
Right. And because they make people think that there's something wrong with that.
You come over here to do some hair and makeup because you're good at it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get here and realize I got to spend like $3,000 to go to school and get a license for this.
Right.
And waste 2 years just to braid somebody's hair.
And every year you have to buy a license for the privilege of spending money for your own salon and making a nice salon so people will go there. They're going to tax you or license you so that, you know, I mean, it just doesn't make sense.
No, it discourages people doing good things for themselves. It keeps people in that I need government mentality.
Exactly.
Because I need them to braid hair.
But you've been, every show that you've done, you've shown how people can do things on their own, and you've given ideas on what people can do to improve their lives without needing the government to do it for them. But yet it's such an easy thing to sit back and not do anything.
Yeah.
And because most ways to improve yourself, to make your life better is to use yourself to do it.
Yeah.
You feel better about it.
Yeah.
And you can help people that way. But
it empowers yourself.
Right.
Yeah.
But that goes against the norm of what the liberals think. And I mean, that's not the way our country was supposed to be.
But it's not really that the liberals aren't trying to empower you. They want to give out these free social programs.
Most definitely.
Because they want you to be dependent on them.
And keep voting for them so that you can keep right. the gravy train coming.
Right. So they say they're there for your best interest and to help you, but really they're just keeping you dependent and telling you it's okay so they can maintain power.
Mm-hmm.
And do what they want and drop bombs where they want. And it's just sick.
Well, yeah, but you've been saying that ever since you've done the show. I think that's been one of your, which is good, has been one of your themes. And your outlook, which everybody, I think, would benefit from, is that do more yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be dependent on the government. You know, you'll feel better. You'll come up with more ideas, like you just said with the phone and that. I mean, why did Steve Jobs or Bill Gates, why do they have so much money? And it's not because they just sat back and right. people kept giving them money. They kept innovation going.
And like the guy that made Amazon.
Right. He's the richest guy in the world now.
Right.
I mean, but he had an idea, and he did it himself. The government didn't help him.
Well, I'm sure once he got bigger, he started getting some government cash. Well, but, I mean, he launched it and made it incredible before that ever happened.
Yeah, but I don't even know if he got government cash. I mean, he ends up buying the New York, the Washington Post. I mean, the warehouses he's developed. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think in the beginning, he underpaid his employees. And that probably helped them a little bit. But now he's working on that.
Right.
And I think one of the reasons why he's working on it is because of President Trump's policies. And, you know, I mean, he wants you to make more. He's more of a individualist. Do it yourself. You can make more of yourself.
Right.
And if you work.
It's all about the mindset.
Exactly.
Like, you're not going to be good unless you put your mind to it.
Mm-hmm.
You can't help yourself until you decide to help yourself.
Right.
And people that are in this victim mentality will never be able to help themselves.
Mm.
And it's just sad. Some people just won't be able to.
No, you're right. I feel sorry for people that want to do things themselves today because they're almost... they have it harder than somebody that gets something for nothing.
Right.
So if you want to make something yourself and do it by yourself, work hard. It's a tougher thing to do because there's so much against you.
Easiest thing.
Right. And plus it's not the easiest thing to do because, a lot of times you are pushed down by the government,
mm-hmm.
you know.
And, they don't like that.
Right.
They don't like you trying to make something of yourself. But, I think I'll save this for next time, but I did have, I'll give you the headline here, and it does have to do with victim mentality. British schools ban expensive coats so poor students won't feel stigmatized. Bans like this just encourage a victim mentality. I read that and I was laughing. And that's where we're headed. That is where we're headed. Pretty soon, Noah won't be able to wear his Nike coat to school because some kid's parents can't afford it, unfortunately.
Right.
And he feels stigmatized.
Well, it's almost like, you know, if when Noah plays in soccer, let's say,
mm-hmm.
his team, if they win... And Noah was like one of the stars. He can't get, or no, they lose, right? They lose the tournament. Do you know they have to all have the same trophy?
Yeah.
Because they don't want one child to feel like somebody else is better.
Participation trophy.
Yeah.
It's stupid.
I mean, you can't have like the top three get a trophy. Everybody has to get a trophy.
Right. No, and there are some people that played great and some people that played poor.
Right.
And like, that's just how it is.
And the thing is that, you know, give them a certificate, honorable mention that they played for participation. But we got this mentality now that everybody's the same as everybody else. And why excel? Because...
Right, and we're not. We're all individuals.
Know, right. And I think it's pitiful. Plus, one of the funniest things I heard was that you cannot say in school today, you cannot say, well, Jimmy's my best friend.
Really?
You can't have best friends anymore because you may have a good friend and he'll feel slighted that Jimmy's your best friend.
That's dumb.
Well, that's, you know what? You talk about regulations and that's one of them. We're getting such, we're becoming such terrible society because we
all
preach.
All this PC stuff.
Right, all the PC stuff. I just want to tell you about talking about PC stuff. In one of our Thanksgiving trivia facts today, I always learned that the Pilgrims had the first Thanksgiving with the Indians because of the harvest. They had a good harvest and they shared things.
Well, that's what you learned from our public school indoctrination center.
Right. But I was reading about things because I don't know. I like to get movies and watch mm-hmm. things happen. And there was written down by one of the fellas that was there. And he wrote a book on, or he kept a diary of what happened. Well, now they're saying that the first Thanksgiving happened 50 years earlier in Florida when the Spanish conquered the Indians. And now get this, conquered the Indians down there. And they got together. The Indians were afraid because they thought they'd be shot by the Spanish. And if you want to go back, probably the Vikings, when they came over 300 years ago, was the first Thanksgiving. But I think the first organized one, peaceful one, was the one that we know. We didn't enslave any Indians like the Spanish did. So I don't know. It's just different things that you read. You get kind of a different idea on things. But if you told people that, they'd say, oh, you're crazy. You know, you're crazy.
No, they told me in school that.
Right, right. So.
Well, they told you a lot of things in school that weren't so correct.
Well, but now we're getting politically correct too much on the other way.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we can't have our. But they're shattering all our dreams. You know?
Yeah. So I'm going to leave this coat band to laugh about next time. But if you guys find anything worth talking about, please send it my way.
Yeah, that would be good. Yeah. Hey, I know I'm going to wish you a happy Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving, even though it's my least favorite holiday.
That's right. You don't want to worship the turkey.
No. Have a good week.